Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now on to the episode. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast with me, your host, Francesca. So in today's episode, I wanted to just run through five things that women 40 plus should ideally avoid, or if I'm going to be completely honest and transparent, I would say absolutely avoid. So many women, including myself, enter our 40s and we suddenly feel like things are changing in our body, and it's even in our emotional well-being as well, or we might just have a sense that things are off. And there's so much we can do to support ourselves as we move into our 40s, but we have to understand that as we move into this phase, so anywhere from late 30s, we likely need to start doing and not doing things slightly differently. What was okay in your 20s and your earlier 30s isn't always, or usually isn't okay in your 40s and beyond. And that's the thing about perimenopause. As we move through it, the more we keep on doing things or not doing the things, you know, that we've always done or not done, the more we'll continue to feel off, and the symptoms can become more intense and more persistent as we move through perimenopause. I see a lot of women who, I hear a lot of women that say, they're suddenly feeling off, but it can't be to do with anything that they're doing or not doing, because they've always done things this way. And this is where we have to appreciate, and we have to accept, that some of the habits that used to work well for our body might be doing more harm than good now. And actually, this advice goes for anyone with hormonal imbalances of any age and stage. You know, just because things were always working before and not causing any issues, it doesn't mean they're not causing issues now. And this is something that's really, really important as we move through perimenopause. And I speak to a lot of friends, whether it's close friends or just acquaintances I bump into, and we'll have conversations, and they'll say things, you know, like, I just don't understand why I'm feeling different. It must be something sinister that could be wrong with me. And they kind of say it in passing. So, and then I guess it's my practitioner hat on, that I'll listen to these conversations and just think, how is this just being said in passing? Like, this is really important. And, you know, it's something that we want to understand. We want to understand, like, what's going on? Why are things changing? Why am I feeling differently? And then what can I do? So, obviously, and that's why I love it when people come to work with me as clients, because this is exactly what it is that they want to know. They want to take control. They want to take charge. So yeah, this is what today's episode is about. I was just kind of running through five simple things. It's not obviously everything. I just wanted to keep it a little bit shorter this week and just give you some sort of top line things that could be, because usually it is just these top line things, at least to start with. And if we can get a handle on them and just realize that actually this isn't working for me anymore, and I'm just going to make this small tweak, it can make the biggest difference to how you feel emotionally, physically, mentally, cognitively, everything. So yeah, it's just understanding that it's a time of reflection as we move through perimenopause. It's a time to say, okay, we're here now. Things aren't going to be the same as they were in my 20s and 30s. And the things that I was doing or not doing then, I need to change now to make it as trouble-free as it possibly can be, because it can be in perimenopause. So whether we're experiencing fatigue, mood swings, we're feeling less resilient to stress, less resilient to our gym workouts, we're struggling to recover, you know, it's taking longer to recover from them. Maybe it's stubborn weight gain, particularly around the middle, worse PMS, horrible periods. The hormonal shifts of perimenopause change everything, and we don't just have to accept it. So let me share five things that I don't recommend for women 40 plus, or as I said, anyone experiencing hormonal imbalances. If you want to support your hormones, if you want to feel more energized and really thrive during perimenopause and of course beyond, then these are just some things to skip or to rethink. So the first one is, don't ignore the impact of chronic stress. I've talked about this on many previous episodes. You can scroll through the titles of my previous episodes and see that there's specific episodes on this, and it's always weaved into most episodes. Stress isn't just a mental or emotional experience. It is a hormonal one. The way that our body's changing in perimenopause is literally a stressor. Add to that, obviously, you know, life loads and stresses that we already have, or that might be becoming, like, ramping up, becoming more intense as we move through our 40s, which is usually the case. And it can be this kind of, you know, recipe for more intense symptoms and imbalances. When you're constantly under stress, your cortisol rhythm gets disrupted. This is something big in perimenopause, and that has a cascade effect on your energy, your sleep, your mood, your weight, and even how your body handles estrogen's new fluctuations in perimenopause. It's fluctuating erratically, and also on how much progesterone you make. And when our life load is just too much, or, you know, we're not supporting our nervous system, which most of us aren't, which is our stress response system, basically, the brain and our adrenal glands. If we're not supporting that to feel, if we're not supporting our bodies, our brains to feel calm and safe, our entire hormonal experience in perimenopause and beyond will feel more intense, sort of feel more heightened. And also, during perimenopause, your adrenal glands, which are the tiny little glands that sit on top of your kidneys, I've talked about them before, but they're responsible for releasing our stress hormones, cortisol, adrenaline, in response from signals coming down from the brain. Those tiny little glands, they take on a bigger role in hormone production, for example, DHEA, which converts into testosterone, and also some production of estrogen. And even more so postmenopause, they take on that role. But if they're too busy pumping out stress hormones, they can't do their job well for all those other hormones. So, for example, when I see low DHEA and low testosterone in a woman, it's usually a stress situation. It's usually a stress thing, that they're so stressed, these poor little adrenal glands are unable to make the DHEA that we need in order to convert into testosterone. And DHEA on its own is important, but it also does convert into testosterone. So I've been seeing it on my own hormone testing for, I mean, I'm 45 and I've been seeing it since probably 37, 38. Mine already started to decline back then. DHEA and testosterone, they're consistently low when I test. And it's, for me, it does always come back to my adrenals, my stress, and how I'm managing it, and how, you know, every body, every nervous system is completely different and unique in how we respond to life and stresses. Something that happened to me, let's say, you know, 10, 15 years ago, could still be sort of showing up today in how I respond to life. And that's the same for everybody. So, and some people can be more naturally resilient and others just aren't. And it comes down to so many different things, DNA, childhood, lots and lots of different things. So it's just important that's why I always say it's important not to compare your own, you know, how you deal with stress and its impact on your body. Don't compare that to other people and say, well, they're dealing with this and this, and they don't feel like this, or they don't experience these set of symptoms that are related to stress. It's just that's their nervous system, and we don't need to look at theirs. We need to just be focusing on ourselves. So just something to, you know, really consider, that in order for healthy hormone production, we also need to be managing stress. So instead of ignoring the impact of stress, prioritize daily nervous system support. Really do make this a priority. And again, I've talked about this in previous episodes. It's one of the foundational pillars of the work that I do with my clients, and also in my Midlife Thrive membership. It is one of those four foundational pillars. It absolutely has to be. So prioritizing daily nervous system support could look like mindful walks in nature, at least, but, you know, as many days as possible through the week, a few minutes of deep belly breathing, journaling, gentle yoga, or somatic based therapies, or body scan meditations, also known as yoga nidra, or non-sleep deep rest, NSDR, if you wanted to Google any of those. Body scan meditations are really, really calming. Some of my favorite things to do sort of outside of that, maybe where you're looking to find a one-to-one practitioner, include craniosacral therapy and somatic experiencing. So one-to-one with a practitioner, somatic experiencing, also known as SE. It's not super, super well known, but it is becoming more and more, well known in the UK, and you can find SE, somatic experiencing practitioners. It can significantly support our stress by helping us become more aware of the bodily sensations that are related to our specific stressors or traumas, or the things that are, you know, certain things that are on our minds, or fears that we might have. becoming more aware of how and where we feel the sensations associated to those thoughts or experiences in our body can over time improve our nervous system regulation and that sort of sense of safety, which is what we essentially need in order to calm our stress response and help our hormones regulate and balance. So cranial sacral therapy is like it's not the same as somatic experiencing. It's just a different modality, but it's a really lovely, you'd kind of have to Google it. I'd have to do a whole other episode on it because I don't even understand how it works myself, but it's extremely calming and regulating and definitely worth looking into. It's something that I've actually been having every month for about 5 years now. And I find it so restorative and sort of like a lovely kind of nervous system reset for me. They're both excellent, SE and craniosacral therapy, for calming a frazzled system and sort of restoring balance. So number two is don't skip strength training in favor of endless cardio or HIIT sessions. So while cardio, of course, you know, has its benefits, muscle building needs to be our top priority in our 40s and beyond. So these long cardio sessions, whether it's long distance running, you know, cycling, whatever it might be, and or high intensity workouts, the, you know, these 45 minute to 60 minute HIIT sessions that aren't actually, they're not even genuine HIIT in the true sense of the word, interval training, they're just high intensity workouts. They can raise cortisol levels, which are likely already dysregulated because the changes in estrogen and progesterone of perimenopause naturally impacts cortisol regulation. And so keeping these workouts in, which may have worked super fine in your 20s and early 30s when you weren't in perimenopause, continuing to keep these kind of workouts in can actually break down muscle. It's increasing cortisol, continually sort of dysregulating cortisol, which can lead to this breakdown in muscle, which is the last thing you want in your 40s and beyond. We're already losing muscle. We want to focus on building muscle, putting it back, keeping it there, not doing anything that's going to be what's known as catabolic, breaking muscle down. And not only this, but this, you know, too much HIIT, too much intense cardio just places added pressure on your stress response system that we've just discussed in point one, and those really small adrenal glands, making stress feel worse and intensifying many of the common sort of symptoms and experiences that we go through in perimenopause that are quite often linked to cortisol dysregulation, like sleep issues, anxiety, cognition issues, hot flushes, night sweats. And especially as we move into menopause, get closer to menopause itself, these, you know, kind of workouts are really impactful on sort of intensifying symptoms. So strength training, on the other hand, it builds lean muscle, it supports our metabolic health, it balances blood sugar, it supports insulin sensitivity, which I've talked about before, really, really important in perimenopause and beyond. And strength training protects your bones and your brain without impacting cortisol too much or even at all. So this is why it's definitely something to be more focused on. So my top tip would be to walk around 8,000 steps a day. Now that's not, you know, scientifically proven, but around 8,000 steps a day is, you know, pretty ideal for most people, especially mindfully in nature where possible. And then aim for 2 to 3 or maybe 4 if you have the time and inclination, but definitely 2 to 3 strength training sessions a week. They don't have to be super long. They can be 30 minutes, 45 minutes, 2 to 3 a week. Really good qualities, strength training, weightlifting sessions. And then also considering, you know, your workouts need to evolve with your body. Now is the time to train. Literally, it sounds like a cliche, but train smarter, not harder. We don't need to go at it like crazy every day, getting up at 5 a.m. to get to the HIIT class or the spin class. And, you know, training 6 days a week. We don't have to be doing that anymore. We need to be focusing on what's best for our sort of muscle building, our emotional well-being, our stress response system. And honestly, just walking every day, particularly in nature where possible, 2 to 3 strength training sessions. Some gentle yoga sprinkled in through the week would be great too, if you like it, if you can do it. I tend to just do kind of 10 minutes of yoga here and there throughout my week at home. And if I can get to a yoga class at a studio, every so often I do as well, because I just really love doing that. But otherwise, it's the walk in every day and the strength training throughout the week. Number three, avoid following a vegan diet. So this might not be the most popular piece of advice, but it is how I definitely work in my practice. And I, you know, completely stand by it. A plant-based diet, of course, has many benefits. So plants are packed with fiber, lots of lovely vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, phytonutrients, basically means plant nutrients, phyto. But a diet that excludes all animal products, it can be problematic for hormone health, especially after 40. I see it all the time. I see it with clients in practice, but also with just friends or people I know who have said they've been vegan and then they've slowly started to introduce animal protein into their diet and they're feeling 1,000 times better. I see it on test results. I work with a hormone testing lab and I see test results every week. I see loads of different hormone test results. And when each client has to fill in a little form beforehand. And when we see anyone that does follow a vegan diet, we see a sort of pattern in certain symptoms and results. So it's just something to consider. You know, your body needs certain nutrients. We need heme iron, which is the active form of iron that actually does the work in the body. We need vitamin B12, which is predominantly only found in animal foods. We need DHA and EPA, omega-3 fatty acids, predominantly only found in oily fish. We need complete amino acids from our proteins. And all of these things support energy, mood, muscle mass, cognition, and hormone production, and also hormone metabolism. So, for example, how we're breaking down our estrogen, which is very, very important. And these nutrients, they're either absent or they're just far less bioavailable in a fully vegan diet. And by bioavailable basically means, where I said heme iron, the type of iron we find in plant foods, for example, that are rich in iron is non-heme iron. So this non-heme iron needs to be converted in the body into heme iron so that it can actually do its job. And that conversion isn't always going to work for everybody. So instead focus on eating a diverse range of whole foods every day in your meals, where you're eating plenty of colorful vegetables, plenty of plants, you know, vegetables, berries, herbs, spices, beans, lentils, nuts, seeds, but also including animal-based proteins like eggs, oily fish, quality meat, organic poultry, you know, chicken, turkey. These will provide you those essential building blocks that your hormones and your brain need now more than ever. So definitely something to rethink. You know, if you're vegan for religious reasons and that can't be changed, then of course, see that, you know, full respect for that. And there are ways to work around it if you're working with a practitioner who can really, really support you. But if you're doing it, for example, because you think it's healthier, I really do encourage you to rethink that, particularly as you go through perimenopause and beyond. And number four, don't overdo alcohol and caffeine like you're still in your 20s, because I know this one isn't popular again, particularly the alcohol part, but I have to say it. Alcohol and caffeine can intensify anxiety, sleep issues, mood issues, low energy, fatigue, blood sugar imbalances, hot flushes, night sweats, headaches, even PMS and horrible periods. For some people, again, I've seen it in the test results work that I do with the testing company. If people simply reduce alcohol and or take out the caffeine or reduce their caffeine, they report that so many symptoms have just dissipated. So it really makes a huge difference. I've tried and tested it myself 1,000 times. Family members have tried it themselves. Friends have. And they always come back with the same, you know, response that this has made such a difference, just taking out that second or third cup of coffee, or, you know, just taking out the extra glass of wine that I was having every Friday, that those sort of things. And they'll just report that they're sleeping better, they've got more energy, they feel less anxious. So alcohol in particular puts an extra burden on your liver, which is, you know, the liver's processes for detoxification are really important for clearing out your used estrogen. When your liver's overloaded, i.e. when it's got alcohol in the system to detoxify, even, you know, just one or two drinks, hormone imbalances often get worse and symptoms associated with impaired estrogen clearance, because that gets put on the back burner while your liver clears out the alcohol. Any symptoms associated with that impaired estrogen clearance get worse. So things like heavy periods, clotty periods, fibroids, breast pain. There, of course, can be other reasons for those symptoms. You know, simply having declining progesterone can create those symptoms, but impaired estrogen clearance is often associated with those symptoms. And so if somebody is drinking more than, say, 1 to 2 drinks at a time, more than just, say, once or twice a week, when they actually reduce their alcohol consumption, they'll report back and say, their periods aren't as heavy, the breast pain isn't as bad, or it's gone. It's that impactful. So instead, limit alcohol to 1 to 2 drinks at any one time, no more than once or twice a week. Or take a break altogether if you want to first and see how your body responds. And then, you know, you can say, okay, well, no one has to be completely alcohol free unless they particularly want to be. But then just take it out for a while and see how your body responds. And then say, okay, I'm just going to have 1 to 2 drinks, or preferably one in any one sitting, and no more than once or twice a week for the future. And with caffeine, keep it, then this goes for tea as well. Keep it to 1 cup a day, ideally in the morning, and always with or after a protein rich breakfast to avoid a cortisol spike from it on an empty stomach. Number 5 is don't settle for normal blood work from your GP. So what I mean by that is reference ranges, just being told that everything's normal. So our GPs, of course, they're doing their best within a system that, you know, is overloaded, under a lot of pressure. But that system that they're taught in is focusing on looking for or diagnosing disease. It's looking for disease rather than looking at optimal functional health. Standard blood work, they often use really wide reference ranges. So your results can come back normal, even though they're far from optimal. So that's, you know, it's especially frustrating when you feel off, you feel like something's wrong. Maybe you're exhausted, foggy, your mood is low, you're dealing with weight changes, and you're just told, oh, everything's fine in your blood work. I don't know what this is. Everything's fine. It's really disheartening, frustrating, and upsetting. You don't really know what to do next. You know, my advice would be to take your health into your own hands. You know, consider investing in private blood work with functional ranges as opposed to just sort of diagnostic ranges, not just disease prevention thresholds. So when it comes to thyroid, for example, as well, regular standard testing only looks at TSH and T4. Some of them look at T3. But most of the time, you're just getting TSH and T4, and that's not the full picture. So whenever clients come to me and said, oh, my thyroid's normal, I don't need to check it, I'll say, well, what was tested? And they'll always say TSH and T4. And that is just not enough. It's not the big picture. And also, I want to see those results. So I'll always ask them for a copy from their GP so that I can have a look at them and compare them to the functional reference ranges, which are, narrower. They're much narrower ranges. So yeah, we don't want to just stop at TSH and T4. We want to check free T3, reverse T3. We also want to check ferritin, B12, iron when it comes to thyroid health. These are all really important for thyroid health as well. You know, and if you're still feeling rubbish despite being told everything's normal, always, as I said, ask for a copy of your results. If you're working with a practitioner like myself, then ask for those results and show them to your practitioner, ask them to have a look. But if you're not working with a practitioner, you should want to see them for yourself anyway. That's your data. You should want to see, okay, what was my result? And then you can go and look further into it. You know, you can have a look at, for example, how close to the low or the high end of that wide reference range was that particular result. Could this mean that there is an imbalance despite being in range? So for example, the reference range for ferritin with the NHS is between 10 and 300 UG per litre for women. Between 10 and 300, that's really wide. So imagine that your results are 11 or 20. You'll be told that your results are normal, but what do you think? Do you think 20 is okay in a range as wide as 10 to 300? I don't think 20 is okay. Of course, 20 is not okay. You're at the very, very low end of this wide range. And you could be potentially told it's all normal. There's nothing wrong with you. You must be going mad if you think you've got low iron. It's not that, you know. So we have to kind of look a little bit deeper at our own results and just see, could this do with improving despite being told it's normal? And, you know, so on for many other important markers like T4, TSH. These are wide reference ranges. And as I said, T4 and TSH on their own, they're just not the full picture of the thyroid anyway. So in my one-to-one practice, for example, I'll run functional testing with my clients, or if they have, like I said, their own copies of their own results from their doctor that they can send to me. Then I'll go through those with a fine tooth comb and compare their ranges to the functional ranges and see where we can maybe say, oh, actually your iron's not great, or actually your B12 could come up. If they don't have results, they haven't done any results with their own GP, then we'll run them if they have the budget for it. These are pretty low cost, full blood work, for example, privately, or more comprehensive thyroid investigations. I do that with most of my perimenopause clients. And in some cases, in my one-to-one work, if the client has budget for it, then we're also doing things like comprehensive stool testing, organic acids, nutrient tests, the dried urine test for comprehensive hormone, known as the Dutch test. This one is a big one. It's really, really helpful if a client has, like I said, budget for it. It looks at sex hormones, stress hormones, so your adrenal health, key nutrient markers, hormone metabolism, so like how your body is breaking down. It's estrogen, it's testosterone, it's progesterone, if it's making progesterone. And it also includes things like organic acids that provide clues about oxidative stress in the body, inflammation, and also brain chemical imbalances. So those are really helpful ones. And we're looking at function. We're not looking to diagnose, disease. I can't diagnose disease anyway. It's completely out of my remit. But these functional tests are just really helpful to see, how is your body functioning? Could this explain X, Y, Z? And if we address this, can it improve X, Y, Z? So that is just my final point, is, really advocating for yourself a little bit more and being more interested in your own results and seeing, just having a look yourself and seeing what you think. So I hope these 5 points have given you some inspiration on some things that you can do or not do in your 40s to help yourself feel better, or just stay feeling good if you're already in your 40s and you're feeling good. You deserve to feel well. You deserve to feel vibrant. You deserve to be and feel supported in this chapter of life. You don't deserve to be dismissed or just told to sort of get on with it. And this really, this whole podcast is about empowering you with the sort of educating you, giving you the information about what perimenopause is, what's happening, what can happen, what can make us feel better, what we can do differently. So I really hope that this episode has just helped a little bit more with that. If you've been doing everything right, you still don't feel like yourself, then I hope these 5 common habits or things, if you can pinpoint 1 or 2 of them, then amazing. Even if it's just 1 of them, you can say, yeah, I am doing that, or I'm not doing that, I'm going to start, or I am doing that, I'm not going to do that. Just making a few simple shifts can lead to more energy, better mood, better sleep, more confidence in your changing body, and just really help you thrive through your 40s, basically. And that is what I want for everyone. I want it for myself, and I'm on that mission every day. And of course, I want it for the people who are working with me and the people who are in my community, the people who are listening to this podcast. So thank you for listening. If this episode resonated with you, share it with a friend, and I'd really appreciate if you would leave a review or give the podcast 5 stars to help spread the message, to help spread this podcast around to other people, so that more and more women can learn that perimenopause doesn't have to mean a decline in health or energy or anything else, and that it can be a powerful, transformative time. Thanks again, and I will see you next time. Bye-bye. If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.